Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of The Capture, which is a Peacock original, although I believe it had already aired on BBC prior to that, to Peacock existing, maybe.
Yeah, that was the impression I got from IMDb, that it was a BBC original, and then Peacock got it.
I think when Peacock is saying it's an original for, like, the North American market.
Yeah.
Just like sci-fi would claim Doctor Who was a sci-fi original or whatever. I don't remember if they did that or not, but they did that for a few other shows.
They did it for some Canadian shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's marketing.
Yeah. Well, we heard about this through a Comic-Con at Home panel.
Right.
And at the end of the panel, because they had talked during the panel about how many CCTV cameras there are in London.
I mean, we've been to London.
Right, and I'd been aware that there are lots, especially in the tube stations.
Tube stations, walking around town, it seems like on almost every corner and stuff. So there's a lot, but the number is staggering.
Yeah, we Googled it after the panel, because they didn't give a number in the panel.
It's like over 600,000?
Yeah, they said it's one camera for every 14 people. And part of how I knew that it was a staggering amount was I'd actually seen a documentary at one point after 9/11 where they were saying that various cities were working together on, you know, this is what's worked for us. Will this work for you? And London had advised New York, you should put in CCTV like we have.
Well, and the whole show, now the season is 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And they're about an hour longish, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And
a fast hour.
Yeah. Well, and a lot happened. 6 hours was about the right length. They could have gone a little more. They might have been able to do it in a little less, but I think they hit the right spot, the sweet spot. The whole thing is around CCTV and people being prosecuted based on that footage because, well, there was witnesses on the other side of the screen.
It's the decisive evidence, much in the way that, 5-10 years ago, it was revolutionary that DNA...
Yep.
Was the decisive and incontrovertible evidence because at that point they felt that the DNA testing had reached that, I almost want to say that level of purity.
Yeah, the twist here, of course, is the video evidence is you can't believe what you see in this day and age of deep fakes and other, you know, editing and tricks like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they touch on fake news.
Yes, I thought the touch on that, particularly at the end, I thought was good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because we're going through the first 4 episodes, trying to piece together, okay, who did the deed?
Who did what? Who can you trust? Who can't you trust in what respect?
Well, and what really happened?
Yeah, because there are some characters that, okay, you've got a police officer and you've got the guilty party or presumed guilty party. Those are your two main characters that you're following. And when it comes to Sean, the presumed guilty party, for instance, with his lawyer, in the can we trust him category, it's both can the police trust him to be honest with them versus just defending his client, but there's also can his client trust him to be looking out for his best interests, etc.
Well, and while the whole thing was around who can who trust... It's not we, well, even to a degree, we as a viewer.
Yes.
Who can we trust? But they all kind of held true. I don't think there was any cheating or bad narrative.
There was only one thing when they started laying out in episode 5. Well, here's what happened.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get to. Is for the first 4, we're trying to figure out what's going on, who's doing what, etc. But the 5th one is kind of what I've referred to in other episodes as like the parlor scene.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of everybody meeting in the parlor and the detective saying, this is what happened, it was basically rolling back and giving us what had happened in those 4 episodes from another angle from what really happened, mm-hmm. how things are set up, and dropping in key moments from the first four to anchor us in the timeline.
Yeah, and they...
And it went for the full episode.
Yes, and they gave us really all but, I'd say, two pieces of information I still wish I knew.
There was one about where the friend comes in and where the evidence in the trunk came from.
Yeah, so it's really all tied to the friend. And the fact that the friend sends a text saying, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it implies he sold out Sean. The question is to whom, when, and how.
Mm-hmm.
It's not essential to the story, but that would be the closest thing I'd say to like a dangling plot line.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was hinging around this faked CCTV footage of Sean at a bus stop and presumably committing a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, it's right there in front of you. Of course he did it. And of course everyone's believing it at first. And he's like, no, that's fake.
Well, and he pinpoints the moment that it goes from being, yes, that's me. Yes, that's my barrister. Well, yes, that happened, to no, that didn't happen.
Because when we're watching the footage, I think for the first time, it's the police officer showing it to Sean and his lawyer, and he's like identifying, yep, that's her, yep, that's me, and she's like, for the record.
Yeah.
You know, and then things, the video isn't what happened in his mind. And for a while, we're wondering, well, is he right? Are we right? And we'd seen enough that...
And he's a soldier with PTSD.
Yeah.
Which plays into it in a good way.
But there was aspects of, could the video have been faked? And there was one character for a while who was like, you couldn't do that for a live feed. And we, in another episode, seen where it seemed to be happening for another live feed. And then mm-hmm. he introduced the concept of, well, if you introduced a delay...
Yeah.
That would give you the time to either slow the footage down or do whatever, splice something in. But the hang-up I always had is, okay, doing the edit point wasn't my hang-up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think in certain places it would be really hard to do that. You know, busy, you know, heavily populated part of London. But a street where nothing much is really happening, yeah, not too hard to loop the video, whatever. But how do you get the footage to put in?
Yeah.
And they finally explain that in that fifth episode. And I'm like, okay, you covered your bases. I'll buy that.
Mm-hmm.
When Sean was getting interrogated by Frank and there was a video playing, I don't really want to know how they filmed that one.
No.
But there was the question of how did they film that one. And I've seen on YouTube deepfake videos. There's one where actor, I think Jordan Peele, is doing an Obama impersonation on one side of the screen, and on the other side, you see what looks like Obama. And the guy's nailing the voice, getting the mannerisms and stuff like that. I saw another one. There used to be, there is a YouTuber, Freddie Wang, who did Video Game High School and a few other things. He had some other people he worked with, and one of those people was with this group mm-hmm. that I watched the video from. The first of the two was basically they faked Tom Cruise coming to their office.
Oh.
And what they did is they got a not Tom Cruise impersonator. And that's literally, I think, his tag on like Instagram or some of the social media. I forget what. And he came in. He sounded enough like him. He could do the mannerisms and all that. And then they deep faked Tom Cruise's face onto a guy who already looked a lot like Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was good, not perfect, but impressive.
Yeah.
The one I had seen earlier was when they took the guy who had worked with Freddy and stuff and basically created a quote-unquote found footage, like it was on a cell phone, of Keanu Reeves stopping a convenience store robbery using this guy who does not look particularly like Keanu in that role.
Well, okay, that's one of the things that did slightly drive me crazy, is at one point we have late... I think it's even in the final episode, a bit where they've clearly done what they're now telling us they call a correction,
mm-hmm.
a replaced footage thing. But the only two people we see with the person who wasn't faked or corrected, one is like three times the body weight and a different height of the person that it was supposed to have been corrected to. And the other is different gender and skin color. So I'm like, oh, who was really in the footage?
I thought the footage we had seen that we had thought was fake turned out not to have been.
I'm talking about the school.
Oh, that one. Got it. Okay. Yeah, it was unclear who they used, who had actually been in the school at that point to get replaced.
And who the other person, the kid, would have gone with willingly.
Yeah, that part was unclear to me.
I mean, it's not a huge thing. It's just if one of the two people in the scene had happened to be believable for being faked out, that would have helped.
I took it as they had had somebody else from that group do it. It didn't have to be one of the people with the kid. The way the stuff works, though, is you basically, like in this case where they were faking out Keanu, had taken a ton of his movies and trained a AI program to recognize and to get the face from every angle possible.
Yeah.
And then they did the same sort of a thing on the footage they shot for their actor. And then basically said, well, you see this, use that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had done a couple of cheats. You know, they put on the black wig for Keanu's hair to frame the face. They did he's got like a widow's peak, so they put a baseball cap. You know, they lit it such to give even lighting as if it were like movie footage. And they also never did a profile. Because the nose and stuff like that. But here, they were doing not only that kind of face replacement for that bus stop scene at the beginning, but they had effectively reenacted the whole thing ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, depending who's in on it, how would you have the right clothes? How would you have the right location? How do you know they're going to find right there? And they ended up covering that and had a couple of good lines of dialogue for, well, what about this? What about that? And kind of check those boxes.
Yeah. We filmed it with the car in the shot, with the car not in the shot, with the headlights on, with the headlights off. Yeah.
Car coming from this angle, from that angle, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And using a bus passing by or a truck passing by to kind of hide the edit point or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because it allows you to put in, you don't have to transition from their footage to your footage on the person.
Mm-hmm.
Just the scene.
Yeah.
And, I mean, having seen what some people can do with open source software effectively at home with a beefy enough computer. And it's funny because this team that did the Keanu one, it's like, oh, well, we got it from this place. And I'm like, actually, that's the place I bought my last computer from.
That's funny. Yeah.
And I didn't get one of their high-end video workstations or whatever.
Yeah.
But this concept of a story for the capture worked perfect in London because, again, they've got the footage. There was an aspect of there's some blind spots or whatever, which you just know over time are going to be fewer and further between.
Mm-hmm.
And it really opened the question of if somebody is able to intercept the signal before it gets to the central place or whatever, build in that delay, how would they ever know?
Yeah.
Because...
Well, and they have a great scene fairly early on of basically a police car sitting at the corner, staring at the address. Somebody in the station with the CCTV says...
She's watching the footage. Yeah. They're there, and they're like, we don't see them.
Yeah.
And it comes down to, do you trust the other side?
Mm-hmm.
What they really should have done, I think this was actually listed as a quote-unquote goof on the IMDb page for one of the early episodes, they have a cell phone.
Mm.
Do a video call.
Yeah.
Show what you're seeing.
Yeah.
Because if you're in the CCTV headquarters watching the footage, seeing the thing, and you're seeing also presumably live footage from your coworker at an equivalent-ish angle.
Yeah.
They don't match. How is that possible? So it really brought up a lot of questions. I mean, the whole, I don't say invasion of privacy, because these are being done in public streets and stuff like that.
But it's funny you say that, because that was the number one reason given for not doing it in New York. Americans feel that this comprehensive a CCTV system would be an invasion of privacy.
Well, and
it covers everybody's front doorstep and front lawn, for instance.
It is and it isn't, because it's particularly when you've got it on the scale of London, New York, one of those kinds of cities, the number of people you're dealing with, you're equally invading everybody's privacy while simultaneously not invading any particular person's privacy unless they're looking for that person.
Yeah.
And it's with the inclusion of facial recognition, which they definitely had an aspect of here.
Well, and they did some interesting conversation about reading body language.
Yes. When the initial scene at the bus stop happens, the person who had kind of called it in was later saying, I didn't see it coming. Normally you see it coming. You see, you know, the body language, you see the tensing up, you see whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because it also showed that humans have a pattern recognition ability. And if you're watching the same sort of thing over and over again, you may not always be able to verbalize what you're seeing, but you know,
yeah,
when certain things are coming sometimes.
That instinctive response, that fear response that kicks in.
No, it's more than just the fear response. Malcolm Gladwell did a book, I think it was called Blink, and gave a lot of kind of anecdotal evidence on how certain people can just read a situation fairly quickly and make those instant judgments. Now, if you stop and ask, okay, why did you do that? They will come up with a reason. It may not be what really were the neurons firing.
Yeah.
Because if you slow it down, you stop the process.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that it's like, I'm trying to think of a good example. Sometimes you know when somebody's going to cut you off in traffic or something like that.
Yes.
You may not recognize the warning signs consciously, but it's like, ah, that's about to happen.
Yeah.
So I thought that part was good. I thought they had a good cast on this.
Definitely. One of the things, because it was written and directed by the same guy.
Yes, and I can definitely see why that guy wanted to have done both.
Yeah, and one of the things I thought he did beautifully in the early episodes, and he understood when he could kind of switch to the light touch on, was pointing out the cameras.
Yes, there were a lot of times early on, it's like, oh, we're in the hallway at the vending machine at the police station, and then at the end of the thing, it would just pan up a little bit and you'd see the camera that was there.
Yeah.
And later, we saw the footage of that scene from that angle.
Yeah. And he did a really nice job using footage from cameras inside buildings as well as on the streets, especially in that parlor room episode,
mm-hmm.
where it was just kind of a, I need to fast forward you up to speed, and I can do it really quick without dialogue by showing you the camera on the vending.
Yeah.
Scene and a few other things.
Let me remind you of a few scenes from this other angle, so it's not just reusing footage or something.
Yeah.
And it also cut to the black and white at that point, so it gives you a step removed versus you're expecting it to be in the moment video.
And reminding you just how much of this world is under surveillance.
I think there was a definite aspect in the first couple of episodes where the characters were all becoming a lot more aware of how many cameras were around them and how often they were visible there.
Yeah. Well, and it was interesting when Detective Flynn was waiting for the bus, and something about the delayed bus, waiting for the bus, mm-hmm. the footage might have been delayed, all kind of clicked in, and he's like, I think I looked at the footage for the wrong bus.
Yeah, because if she'd gotten on the bus versus what the footage had shown,
mm-hmm.
that would have cleared. And again, they'd found footage of a bus where, well, nobody's in there.
Yeah.
Or she's not in there at the very least. And it really comes down to, can you trust what you see, but also, are you asking the right questions?
Well, the thing about the correction that they said a few times, once we got to, okay, we're going to name it a correction, etc., was law enforcement ends up with evidence that is inadmissible.
Yeah, they, like in London, can't use wiretaps and certain things like that. But if you've got all this intelligence saying, this is what is going down.
Yeah.
But your evidence of it isn't admissible in court. In some people, some of the characters' minds, it wasn't wrong to fabricate said evidence.
Yeah. You know, if the cell phone GPS and the wiretap on the cell phone says, the person was in this parking spot on this street at this time, then what's wrong with creating the CCTV footage?
Well, to reenact it in a believable manner.
Yeah.
And it's a really crazy slippery slope. I mean, it's clearly not right to do, but I can also understand where law enforcement officers would be so frustrated. It's like, we know the person is guilty.
And if we can just show them what the intelligence is showing us, and that seemed to be the twist they were putting on. We're simply showing them what all the information is showing us.
Yeah.
And there was definitely a you trust your eyes aspect.
Well, it's hard to look at footage like, again, the bus scene that was being played for Sean when he's like, no, that didn't happen. And it's like, well, I see it right there.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the burden of proof is on the one denying it versus, well, here's the clear, quote unquote, evidence.
Yeah.
And there's one or two other things that I think would be fun to rewatch in light of this. Sim 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I think somewhere I might have a copy of Wag the Dog.
I don't know if I've seen that one.
That's one where it's all media perception and creating the narrative.
Sim 1 was a good movie. I got our parents to watch that one.
Yeah. I know where my copy of that is. We may watch that at some point soon-ish. But this is the kind of thing where, you know, last time we were in London, we were walking around town and stuff. We'd seen the cameras, didn't really think anything of it.
Well, I think we've been there enough to be used to it. I've always been aware of it.
But also, there was no feeling, in my mind at least, that anyone would be watching me in particular.
Well, I think it goes back to, for me, I spent a month in London when I turned 20.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the guy at the check-in counter at the hotel, when I told him I wanted to go to a theater show on the West End by myself, he's like, you don't have to worry in the tube stations. There are plenty of cameras. You know, just be alert if there are no cameras. Walk a little faster. This kind of stuff. So I never worried taking the tube by myself at 11 p.m. And I look back on that and I think, I don't think I would have done that. I'm not sure I'd do that now in a major U.S. city.
Oh, I absolutely would feel very nervous walking around New York, even in broad daylight.
And
just part of it's the reputation of the city, part of it's the reputation of London. And I think part of why London has that is because there are quote unquote eyes everywhere.
Yeah.
When people know they're being watched, they act a little better.
Well, the funny thing to me is there was one theater I went to multiple times over the course of the month. Joseph and his amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat was playing there, and I ended up actually going closing night and getting to see both the matinee and the final performance closing night. But anyway, some of the vendors in the area had gotten used to seeing me because I found out where the cast would come out afterwards,
right,
sign autographs and stuff. And one of the pizza guys had called me over one night and told me, there's no camera on this part of the block, so we're keeping an eye on you, just so you know you're always safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, you know, he's aware I'm a stupid American. And I had just thought when I was told you're safe in the theater district,
yeah,
that meant I was safe.
Well, I certainly wouldn't think to be looking around thinking, well, I'm on camera, I must be okay. Because even that's not a guarantee.
No. And I wasn't thinking it that way. I was just thinking I'd been told I was safe in the theater district because there are so many people and it's so well patrolled because so many tourists go there and stuff.
Well, and I think in our country, we're going to see, we have seen already, more and more of that kind of thing with the doorbell cameras and stuff of that nature.
Well, the very fact that here in our community, the news went very public, very big, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago, with if you don't already have a doorbell cam, law enforcement is requesting you get one and install it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, every time you would see something about, oh, somebody's car got broken into near my neighborhood or whatever. It's another reason, well, should I get one of those?
Yeah.
And on the one hand, it gives the footage, it gives, you know, proof or whatever. But now here's this whole concept of, yeah, but can you really believe it?
Well, and the capture had an interesting, almost throwaway line when Sean's being led through a trail of blind spots. And they say, oh, look, there's a camera that's not on the map. Fortunately, it's pointed the other way. Oh, I don't think it's CCTV. Oh, but I wonder if they've tapped into even the private cameras.
It may be a private one, but if it's on the net, somebody could yeah. Well, at one point here in Austin, traffic sucked. Not a big surprise. I was having commute and stuff. I actually, and I forget how I'd found it or somebody had given me the link or whatever, found the page that had all of the street cams in Austin and basically put together a local web page that would link out to the different images and refresh every 30 seconds to a minute or whatever.
Yeah.
And you could see, well, it's backed up or maybe it's just at a light or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you can get a sense of what the traffic is and stuff and the fact that it is real-time-ish.
Yeah. Well, and our local news uses some of those traffic cams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think in certain areas, if crime gets to a certain point, more people are going to have the doorbell cameras and say, hey, let's get them installed in our area and stuff. And I think that makes sense.
I guess I'm just wondering, do you think we're going to reach a point where when you install one of those doorbell cameras, do you think there will be like an opt-in to have not just a wireless feed within your house, but it can also be connected to some greater network?
Oh, I think that's already available. I think with home security systems and stuff like that, some of them already have those kinds of cameras that can be monitored remotely. Likewise, if you've got a pet at home and want to keep an eye on it from work or whatever, I think that that exists.
I'm just wondering if it's also a opt-in and law enforcement can automatically have access without having to gain your permission each time.
I don't know, but...
I mean, like right now, I've been sent emails from almost every genealogy website I deal with that does genealogical DNA saying, please click the opt-in if we can share all DNA results that come through your account with law enforcement.
Well, when we had a series of bombings here in Austin a few years back, my neighborhood was like, I don't know, half a block away from one of them.
You were in the half-mile lockdown radius.
I was in the half-mile lockdown for that. I actually had, I don't know, I remember exactly which it was, but there was a combination of local police, state police, FBI, literally knocking on, you know, all the doors here, including mine.
Yeah.
And it took me a minute to get down to answer them and stuff. It's like, did you see anything? Do you have a doorbell camera? Whatever. It's like, I hadn't seen anything. I don't have a doorbell camera, but it's like, damn, I wish I did. If that can help stop somebody from bombing people.
Yeah. Well, and that lockdown was fascinating because it was a genuine, you cannot step out your front door, you cannot go out your garage lockdown.
It is unsafe to be outside your house.
Yeah. It's not just a don't leave your property.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of those things where if I had had surveillance that, hell, if it could help them, sure, what the hell, why not? I mean, you want to stop the bad things from happening. And that's, I think, how we get people to buy in with, like, the coverage in London and stuff like that. And philosophically, I'm not, like, totally opposed to it. Because my feeling is when I'm out and about in London, I'm not doing anything wrong. And they're not looking at me in particular.
Yeah.
Flip side, if something were to have happened to me while I'm out and about or whatever, there would be the option for somebody to say, hey, John's gone missing. Here's what he looks like. And then... You know, go find me that way.
Yeah. But it all hinges on the, we trust the footage is untampered, genuine, accurate.
The footage and the system.
Yeah.
And in this place, there were people actively corrupting the system from within. And it comes down to the who watches the watchman, you know, kind of mindset, which is scary in and of itself.
Well, and we ended up having two people's
two groups in this story, the capture, one that was doing it systemically and another that was doing it to prove that it could be done to uncover those doing it systemically. And so there were a couple of different acting groups, which is part of what made the story as intricate as it was.
Yes.
I say intricate, not convoluted.
Yes.
Because while it was complicated, it was not overly complex. Or you know what I mean? It was complex, but not overly complicated. It was understandable once we got that fifth episode and they kind of spelled a lot of this out.
Yeah, it worked. Well, and it also explained why the lawyer seemed to be waffling in his attitude, seemed to be genuinely upset Hannah was missing, and
I also liked when, I forget if it was the fourth, fifth episode, when somebody asked, did you really look into the barrister?
Yes.
Why is this person representing that guy?
Why is a human rights barrister representing a soldier?
Yeah. And it's like, I hadn't even thought about that. And clearly neither had the detective.
Yeah. Well, because as Americans, we're trained that you don't investigate the victim because then you're trying to make it look like the victim deserved to be a victim or deserved to...
Don't investigate the lawyer.
Well, but you don't want to make it look like the person who was killed deserved to be killed.
Right. Well, and one of the things I'll say about this is because it was set in London and was a BBC production, some of the acronyms and a few things like that were unfamiliar to me.
Yes.
But not in a way that it's like, crap, I'm confused.
Oh, but I loved the CCTV sign that the whole show starts with. caring for your community through vigilance.
Yeah. You know, when you've got that kind of a CCTV, you've got to have, I don't say propagandized it, but made it popular and palatable.
Yes.
And those kinds of mnemonics, I think, help. And watching the show, they sold the concept of how CCTV could be used for good, how it could be co-opted and, mm-hmm. and kind of corrupted, and that any tool is only as good as the people wielding it.
Yeah. Well, they also covered, do the ends justify the means?
Yes. Because there were quite a few people being used as pawns in quite a few ways. Both the leads.
Yeah.
But I think it was well written, and I think having the guy who wrote it, directed it, gave it a very solid vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I never felt, I mean, there were a few things like you could have sped up just a little bit here and there, but I never felt that the director didn't understand what the writer wanted.
Yeah.
Or the writer got something, wrote something the director just couldn't deal with.
I could never tell if the two officers, Flynn and Lateef, who were working for the main detective, if they ever regretted releasing the footage.
I think Lateef was one that at a couple of points I was questioning whose side she was on.
Mm.
And could have gone either way. Flynn seemed to be on the up and up.
Well, but it was more to me kind of I almost want to say a moral question of they released the footage on YouTube anonymously,
mm-hmm.
the bus stop footage, because they felt if people saw the footage, we'd be able to go with the case.
Well, at this point, they'd had to let the guy go because the footage had gotten officially redacted.
Yeah.
And couldn't be used, and they didn't have any other evidence. But here they are thinking, but we know he did it, which I think the whole reason for that part of the story was to put, I don't say the good guys.
Yes.
In the position that their eventual opposition had been in all along.
Right.
And it's kind of,
but
do your ends justify your means, but the same ends don't justify somebody else's means, if you know what I mean.
Flynn never out and out came across as regretting what he'd done. He was willing to do it again to get to a different end.
Yeah, yeah.
And then with Lateef, she kind of admitted she was only watching out for herself.
Yes. And understandably so. She was basically cast in the position of the wannabe rising star that the lead detective actually kind of was and was regretting when she realized how some of her star was rising.
Yes.
So I think having some of the characters in there as counterpoints to other people in similar situations worked well. I mean, there are a couple of characters that once they were kind of done with, we never really see again. The friend, the grandfather, a few characters like that, but not in a way of, crap, what the hell happened to them?
Yeah.
And there were one or two, the video guy in particular, when he's outside the game at the beginning, it's like, I know I should recognize him, but I don't remember why, because he looked different than the last time we'd seen him.
Mm-hmm.
Casual versus business attire, stuff like that. But overall, again, in six episodes, they get in, they get the story moving. And there's definitely some questions at the first couple of episodes as to what's really going on, who can we trust. Getting that fifth episode that really clarifies and crystallizes a lot, but not everything.
Yeah.
Built to that sixth episode, really kind of pulling everything together well, getting to that nice moment. And then having what felt like a surprisingly long kind of an epilogue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you needed a little time for the dust to settle. And I'm pretty sure they're getting a second season. Or series, if it's a BBC show, whatever.
Well, and I had felt around the second episode that they had a scene where the detective is in front of all of the monitors back at the counterterrorism office, I guess it is. And she kind of puts down her jacket and then she steps forward and almost takes command of the room. And I'm like, are we foreshadowing that at the end of the season, this is where she's going to end up? In charge of all these monitors.
Well, she had...
She had come from there.
Come from there. So yes. There were a couple of things that were done by implication that, once I realized what was going on, made me rethink a couple of the early scenes.
Mm.
Why won't you come have drinks with us? Those sorts of a thing.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have the context to understand the scene at the time. But you got to start somewhere.
Yes. Yes.
So I thought this was a good show. It's definitely one I would recommend. I, again, think they're getting a second season and such, at mm-hmm. least presumably on the BBC, presumably Peacock 2. I don't know who owns what stake and what. But this definitely felt like, while it had a few American actors, it was predominantly, you know, a BBC show that got aired in the US just because there needs to be new shows.
Well, and honestly, I think it's a great show for getting people thinking, upping your awareness, getting you thinking about fake news, privacy issues, Big Brother watching, all that stuff.
I think it'll go over well in the States.
I do too. I think
I enjoyed it a lot.
I mean, as we've watched other thrillers and said maybe, you know, we're not thriller audience or maybe we're not good thriller viewers, but for me, this really worked.
Yeah.
And it wasn't an obvious ticking clock, which I usually think of with a thriller.
There was a case to get solved, but not if it's not done by this point, the world explodes or something.
Yeah.
And I think not having that artificial timeline helped. And I think having kind of the zigzag of who's believing whom, when, and why worked on this show.
Yeah.
Because there are some where it feels like it's a damn ping pong ball. They're teaming up this week and they're at odds next and teaming up the next. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel it was that way. So, like I said, it was a well-constructed show. I think they had clearly thought through the whole thing before filming it.
Yeah.
And had a sense of, and this is where we could go for a second season.
Yes.
Without telegraphing, this is what the second season must do.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely enjoyed it. Glad we'd watched that panel at Comic-Con at home and had found out about it.
Yeah, me too.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.